G'day and welcome to Tabletop Tommies. I'm Johnny.
And I'm Phil.
And in today's episode, we're going to be talking about the armies of Australia. Now, Australia don't have their own army book in Bold Action. And so the first question, I suppose, Phil, is where would I find the rules for Australia and why do they deserve an episode in their own right?
So the main rules appear in the New Guinea campaign book. There is obviously reference to them in the Western Desert book as well, because they did appear in North Africa and the Middle East and Mediterranean. But New Guinea is the place to look. They get a pretty, you know, comprehensive coverage of that period of the war. Very similar to how the French in North Africa and the Free French in North Europe in the Battle of the Bulge book get a pretty decent comprehensive coverage. So we included, you know, an earlier French episode where we ran through those two lists. So I think it's only fair that we do so for Australia. And we do see them at events as well. They are, you know, not like, you know, every single event, but they're pretty common. You do see them as a minor nation appearing.
Yeah, because you could run them sort of as Brits, couldn't you, in hats, by using the armies of Britain and the Commonwealth rules. But my understanding is that the New Guinea book gives them a little bit of extra flavour. And so it is one that we do see a lot of TOs allowing, even though the genericness of it is a question that we'll not address directly at this point in the show.
Yeah, so in the Western Desert book, you've got the Commonwealth Infantry Brigade Selector. Mm-hmm. And in the Western Desert book, you have the Commonwealth National Characteristics. So if you wanted to run Australians representing, you know, 1941, 1942 in North Africa, then you'd look at the Western Desert book, you'd choose the Commonwealth Infantry Brigade Selector, and then you can choose the Australian National Characteristics. But they're effectively British troops. They're using British equipment and British, units, basically. But you're adding in the Australian special rules from that book. The New Guinea book offers different units. So it's not just like you've got British units with an Australian twist. They are, they are very different units, which are very much Australian, and they don't appear in a British generic reinforced platoon.
Yeah, indeed. Did Tough Gut have rules for Australia as well?
No, because the Aussies didn't appear in Italy.
Well, they didn't fight in Italy.
No.
I was just trying to remember.
They're not as infantry. You had Australians in the Air Force and the Navy supporting the operations in Europe, but at that point of the war, the Australian infantry were fighting in and around, well, they were in New Guinea, effectively, and then later on, you know, in other parts of the Philippines and through the Pacific Theatre.
Yeah, they crop up quite a lot in the war, don't they? Like, there's quite a lot of engagements that are the Brits versus whoever. And then you'll often see there's an Australian brigade or whatever just cropping up there. But we're going to be focusing specifically on the New Guinea campaign today. Is that right?
That's right, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Brilliant. Do you want to talk us through the campaign then?
Yeah, so in terms of, you know, sort of how Australia got involved in the war, because it was part of the Commonwealth, when Britain declared war, Australia also declared war in 1939. And the way it supported the British war effort was by providing a lot of support in terms of food and that sort of stuff, but also the Navy and the Air Force, and then sending out part of the AIF, which is Australian Imperial Force, to fight in the Middle East. So you will see Australian brigades appearing in North Africa in the Middle East campaign in 1941-42.
Nice.
At the same time, obviously, when Japan then started to push down towards Australia, that was sort of coinciding with moving towards the end of the war in North Africa, and then the need for the Australian government to bring back the AIF troops from the Middle East back to Australia in order to defend Australia and also Australian territories away from the continental part of Australia.
Yeah, that's a big area of what-if history, isn't it? The counterfactual history, what-if Australian mainland had been invaded?
Yeah, if you look on the Bolt Alt Action website, we talked about this in our Is Bolt Action Getting Stale episode. There is a really, really interesting what-if campaign that's been made by the community where they take you through what would have happened if Japan had invaded the Australian mainland. Because there were attacks on the Australian mainland by Japan, but nothing in terms of a full-scale, you know, Japanese invasion. But there's a really interesting sort of fan-made what-if campaign that's on the Bolt Alt Action website to download.
That'd be a fun one to play through.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess you would jump into units then.
Yeah, so, well, Should we start with the national special rules?
Oh, of course. Yeah, let's start with the national characteristics.
So taking this from the New Guinea book, for the Australians, you don't get the national special rules that appear in the Armies of Great Britain. Instead, you get the following three rules, and then you also get a campaign characteristic special rule.
Ooh.
Which we can discuss as to what extent that can be used in events. But in terms of the Australian national special rules, so the first national special rule is limited artillery support, and this reflects the fact that they were fighting in, you know, in this reflects the fact they were fighting in the mountainous terrain of New Guinea and Borneo, which were not ideal for, you know, mass ranks of artillery. So, in game terms, you don't get the free forward artillery observer, nor do you receive the bonus to any prep bombardment.
Fair enough.
Second national special rule is aggressive patrolling. And this reflects then how the Australian infantry had always sought to dominate no man's land. And in game terms, this is a really good special rule. you automatically win the roll-off for who places the first forward deploying unit. Okay. But the second part, which is the really interesting bit, is that no enemy forward deployers may set up within 18 inches of an Australian unit already deployed.
Yeah, that bit's good.
And then the third bit is Australian infantry spot hidden enemies at a range of 18 inches rather than 12. It's the second bit that's really interesting because it does allow you to pre-game start dominating the board. If you slant your list choices towards forward deploying units, knowing that you're going to win the first or be able to deploy the first unit, and knowing that you've got an 18-inch bubble around that first unit, you can really push back or push the opponent's forward deployers into certain areas of the table, much more so than just with that normal 12-inch bubble.
Yeah, that's really nice.
And then the third one is never give up. And quite simply, this means that all Australian infantry in an assault when defending gain the fanatic special rule.
Ooh, nice.
Yeah.
That's pretty tasty, especially if you're coming up against Japanese.
Yeah, there's two keywords there. One is Australian infantry and one is when defending.
So on the first key term,
yeah,
are all of the units we're discussing today, all the infantry units we're discussing today, will they be Australian units?
So there is a unit, which is the PAP1 Infantry Brigade. Mm-hmm. And as written, I would say they don't get that rule because they're not an Australian infantry unit.
Got you. Are they a bit like the...
Native Irregulars?
Are they a bit like Native Irregulars, those ones?
I would say so, yeah. In the same way that Native Irregulars don't... If you take them in a British platoon, they don't get the British national characteristic. I would say in the same way that the PAP1 Infantry Brigade don't count as Australian infantry.
Yeah, I think that's a fair reading of it.
Yeah, I guess so, yeah. So those are the three national special rules. There are also, because it's the campaign book, there are also three campaign characteristic special rules, and you can take one of these, and if I read the exact wording in the book, choose one of the following three campaign characteristic special rules. This will help you capture the feel for the specific campaign you are representing. Mm-hmm. Some scenarios may dictate which of the campaign special rules an Australian force must use. And the purpose for emphasising that is I'm not convinced that if you allow Australians in a generic event, that you should then be taking one of these three, because this is specific to the campaign book, their campaign characteristics, and it has that point that depending on the scenario you play from the campaign book may dictate which campaign characteristic you get to choose.
I agree with your interpretation. I think if it's a narrative event, then they should take the one that's appropriate to whatever narrative you're playing.
Yeah.
If it's a tournament, I'd say, yeah, just ditch them off.
Yeah, and the reason for saying this is that one of these is very strong, which is the first one. So the first campaign characteristic is Australia is next. And then the wording in the book, Australian troops fight in the desperate campaigns of 1942 in the mountains around Kokoda and the swamps of Milne Bay, believed if they failed, their homeland would be invaded next. More Allied decorations, including a posthumous Victoria Cross, were awarded at the Battle of Isurava on a Kokoda track than any other single battle in the Pacific theatre. What this means in game terms is that all Australian infantry units gain the stubborn special rule.
Nice.
Now, that's very powerful. If you combine that with being fanatic when defending in assaults, that's a very, very strong combo for free. The other two campaign characteristics, one is a fighting withdrawal, which is a bit like the Finns, but in reverse.
Mm-hmm.
What this means is that Australian AIF and militia units may advance and then flip their dice onto ambush, but the advance must be directly towards their own table edge.
Yeah.
And then the other one is jungle warfare masters, Which means that infantry squads and officer teams do not suffer the -1 penalty to morale if they lose their NCO or officer. And all infantry units that are being moved as a result of an advance or run order may go down as a reaction to an ambush, even if they've already activated that turn. But to do so, the unit must successfully pass an order check. And note that the unit does not lose a pin if this test is successfully passed.
Right. So you're running, you get ambushed, you can go down if you pass a test. Is that what that says?
Yeah, so if you're advancing or running, yeah, and you get ambushed, you can go down, but you have to pass the test, and it doesn't, and you don't take a pin away because it's not an order check at the start of your move.
It's like an extra reaction. It's quite an interesting one. It'd be quite good to just force someone's ambush, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
If someone's got like a Stuart in ambush and you're trying to move a squad past it, it really adds to that ambush sort of strategy game that you're playing. So it's quite a fun one. I actually don't think that those three rules, even the stubborn one, I don't think is actually overpowered. And so I think if a TO did allow these in, I don't think it's going to be hugely, because the whole time when we're saying stubborn's powerful, I was thinking, but compared to fanatics across your whole army, it's actually not that big a deal. Obviously, I've not played a lot of Australians, so I can't say specifically, but to me, it feels like actually rules as written, maybe you shouldn't allow them in, but actually, I don't think I'm going to be too upset if a TO does decide that, go on, you can have that as well.
Yeah, I think it is special because if you're getting stubborn for free across all Australian infantry units and you're getting fanatic when defending in assaults, you're getting your buff for being stubborn in any situation, yeah, and then you're getting your buff for being fanatic when defending in assaults, which, you know, it's obviously great in terms of not having to concede the assault if you still got models left, even if you've lost. So I think it is actually pretty powerful, that double combo.
I think it's good, but I don't think, I'm not disagreeing that it's, I'm not saying it's not powerful, rather. What I'm saying is I just don't think it's overpowered. Because they're not getting, really their other national characteristics aren't hugely beneficial either. Like, they're good, but they're not like, none of them are killer blow. I actually think that the stubborn isn't game breaking.
Sure.
And I wouldn't really mind it.
Yeah. That's fair enough. That's fair enough.
Should we move on to units then?
Yep. So your headquarter units are pretty straightforward. You get your officer, which is exactly as per the Armies of Great Britain. You get your forward observer, which is exactly as the Armies of Great Britain. And you get your medic, which is 23 points regular, 30 points veteran. Difference here, you can have one medic and up to four men. And your extra four men are native bearers. And they are added for +7 points regular or +10 points veteran. They're unarmed men. They cannot shoot, but they do fight normally in close quarters. And there's a brilliant Warlord Games model of the Australian medic, which is four of the PAP1 natives carrying a stretcher with a guy on alongside an Australian medic. Which is, I love that model, I think it's really great.
But I imagine you'd argue they're not going to be fanatic in defence because they're not Australian.
Because they're not Australian.
Those bearers.
Yeah.
But either way, I mean, I can't imagine many people taking a five-man medic squad.
No.
But it's quite a cheap way to keep your medic alive if you are so inclined to take a medic.
Yeah, yeah.
I haven't looked at the infantry options yet, but I imagine if you had a huge horde where you're going to get to roll for that six lots and lots of times, it might be worth taking a big medic.
Yeah.
But was that everything in the headquarters section?
Yeah, that's the headquarters section, yeah.
Well, let's move into the infantry next.
So your squads and teams. So you've got your militia infantry section. This represents the CMF, which is the Citizens Military Force. And this was the pre-war volunteer militia army of Australia. They didn't fight away from the Australian mainland and Australian territory. So these guys were not in North Africa. They're inexperienced, as you would expect. They're the standard inexperienced loadout. So five men, 35 points. You can add up to five with rifles at +7 points. You can take a submachine gun. You can take an LMG. With the Australians, you can replace your standard LMG of four shots with a Lewis gun. And the Lewis gun then just means you fire three shots rather than four. So the Australians used a lot of Lewis guns rather than having brain guns across their infantry squads.
15 points, is it?
So -5. So 15 points for an extra three shots rather than 20 for four. Yeah.
But really, it's 15 points for one extra shot because previously I had the two riflemen. And so...
Yeah.
And so really, it's about as exciting as an LMG.
Yeah. But if you want to represent, the Australians had in reality, then you absolutely be looking at taking Lewis guns rather than Bren guns.
I think mine left the Lewis guns at the barracks by mistake.
Fair enough. Next one you've got is the AIF, so that's your Australian Imperial Force. So these were the guys that were fighting in North Africa and the Mediterranean. As such, they are regular or veterans, and these represent then the troops that have been fighting overseas and then were rushed back then to Australia as the Japanese were getting closer and closer to the Australian mainland. Their standard loadout, so 10 points a man, 13 for veteran. You can have one with an SMG, and then you can add your LMG in as well, which is a normal LMG rather than being a Lewis gun.
Yeah, these two squads so far, pretty unexciting.
Absolutely standard, yep.
I'm looking forward to the squad that gets to use, that has something special that works nicely with their national characteristics.
Okay.
Is that the next one, perhaps?
Well, it depends on... depends on your perception, doesn't it? So what you then have is in 1943. So once the AIF had returned from North Africa and they'd had a few initial skirmishes and battles with the Japanese, they then reformed how they structured their infantry sections and platoons and companies and regiments and all that sort of stuff. So you had the Jungle Division being formed. So the Jungle Division infantry section is 10 points for regulars, 13 points for veterans. Again, NCO can have an SMG. Three guys this time can have SMGs, and you can have an LMG. So materially, it's effectively just a regular or a veteran squad with up to four SMGs and an LMG, but it just represents how the structure of the Australian forces were changing in 1943 when they created the Jungle Divisions.
Yeah, nice. And from a game perspective, now we're starting to talk because we've now got a squad with four tough fighters with Fanatics when defend, which actually... we're now starting to get some nice synergy between the national characteristics and the squads.
Yeah, you can have them as veterans. If you're allowing the campaign characteristics, they would be stubborn as well. So this is what I mean, where it's the unit choices start to interact quite nicely with the national characteristics and possibly the campaign one as well.
Well, I quite often see, I mean, I don't often see people run Australians, but I have seen people use the one, the retreat one instead of the stubborn one.
Okay.
So I don't know if they'd tried both and found, or whether they were just trying out the retreat one because that's the most fun.
Sure.
But I don't know. Guess we'll have to try them.
Yeah. The next one's the platoon scout team, which is 42 points for regular or 55 for veteran. It's a three-man unit, all with SMGs. They get to four deploy.
Oh, nice. So they're playing 3 points for an SMG and then 1 point to four deploy, basically. So it's 14 points... regular 17 veteran, I think.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Oh, actually, I think they're more veteran. 55, or is it three men in the squad, you say?
Three men.
Yeah, they're actually 18 and a third points per man as veteran, which is a peculiar amount of points to be. They're somehow better value as regular. Pro tip for you there.
There we go. You've then got the independent company commando section. And so this was similar to the British commandos. In terms of gain terms, it's a 70-point veteran five-man squad. You can add up to another five guys at 14 points each. The NCO can have an SMG. Any man can have an SMG for 2 points each. And you can add an LMG. They get tough fighters. And they also get behind enemy lines, which is the commando special rule, which allows you to ignore the minus one modifier when outflanking.
Nice. I like this squad. This is a very good squad. You could rush on from the outflank, haul someone down with the SMGs, and then if they dare to charge you, not a problem. You're a Fanatic. Very cool.
Next one is the independent company raiding party. And this represents then the independent companies who were effectively launching sort of beach assaults and behind enemy lines raids. Their point costings are slightly weird. So they're 97 points for five veterans, NCO and four commandos with rifles. You can add on 11 up to 11 additional men with rifles at 14 points each. Anybody can have a SMG for plus 2 points. You can add a LMG for 20 points. You can give them anti-tank grenades. You can upgrade them to jungle warfare veterans for plus one per model. And that obviously is relevant if you're playing through the campaign missions because it affects your movement and that sort of thing and the impact of the environment on you in the game. Interestingly, so you can add a local scout for plus 38 points. And if you really want to spend a load of money on this unit, you can replace the NCO with a commando officer as a first lieutenant, captain, or major. So similar to commandos, they're tough fighters. They get behind enemy lines. The jungle warfare veterans allows you to start the game hidden. You can put them in ambush if you want to. The local scout, which is the interesting one, allows you, when out flanking, to arrive on the short board edge of their choice rather than having to choose one side or the other.
Oh, nice.
It's a lot of points, though, for plus 38.
38 points, did you say it was for that?
Yeah, 38 points to do that. Yeah.
Yeah.
If you choose to buy the officer rather than the NCO, you still are affected if you do lose the officer. So it's not a great choice there.
No. And because you still have to take your normal officer, you're paying the tax twice, basically.
Yeah, and it very much fits some of the scenarios in the book.
Right, okay. It's an expensive squad. And also, I don't really understand how the points work because they're funky amount of points, aren't they?
Yeah, they're a little bit hard to work out when you start splitting down the base costs.
Yeah, because it's for 10 men, it's 167 points, which means they're 16 points each plus 7 points for some reason. it's a bit of a quirky one, but I'm just going to try and move past it.
Yeah, okay. So then the last two infantry sections you can take is the Jungle Engineer section.
Nice.
Which, interestingly, you can take as inexperienced. So they're standard 7, 10, 13, 5 men with rifles. You can add up to 5 additional men. You can have up to 3 with SMGs. You can have the LMG. You can take a flamethrower, and you can give them anti-tank grenades if you wish.
Nice. Is there any limit on the number of engineer squads you can take?
Yes, because it's limited by the theatre selectors.
Okay. So I guess we'll find out at the end of the episode how many I'm allowed to have, because I want 5.
Yeah, which you can't do because it's not a generic platoon. So every time you see someone rock up to an event with Australians with 5 engineers and 5 brain carriers and a DACA Stuart, it's because Easy Army allows it, but there's no such thing as an Australian generic platoon.
Right, noted.
And then your final squad is your Pathfinder Infantry Battalion. So you can take these inexperienced, regular, or vets. They are expensive. So they're 9 points for inexperienced, 12 for regulars, 15 for vets. Base unit is 5 men with rifles. You can take the NCO, can have an SMG. What these guys get, so the interesting special rules, is Fieldcraft, which means that on the first turn of the game, they count all rough terrain as open.
Nice.
They forward deploy. Jungle fighters, so if you choose to forward deploy, they can set up hidden and in ambush. They also get behind enemy lines, and they're native troops, which means they don't get the never give up national rule, which is what we were discussing earlier.
What is never give up again? Is that fanatics?
That's the fanatic, yeah.
So this is the one you're going to use to block off the table, basically, isn't it? You take 5 squads of this, put them in the middle of the table. It stops any enemy forward deployers, basically gives you dominance across the middle of the table.
Yeah, or you've got your scout team as well, which does the same thing in terms of forward deploying. Whether or not you can take 5 Pathfinder Infantry Battalion sections does depend.
We'll find out later in the episode.
Does depend on whether or not you're taking a generic, if the TO's allowed you to put this into a generic selector or not.
Well, you say that, but I've got no idea what the theatre selector looks like yet. Okay. So from my perspective, it's a bit of a Schrodinger selector at the minute.
Sure.
It could have 5 Pathfinder squads. It could have 0. thing that's interesting here is they've got 2 rules that are directly in opposition, because the forward deployment rule and behind enemy lines, you're never going to be able to use them together.
Yeah.
And so it's nice to have the 2 options, I suppose, but equally, and so it's a bit of a like, does everything squad, but it's not a specialist. And also the fact that its loadout is just an NCO SMG means it doesn't have a specific function either. So it's an interesting one.
Because of how the selectors work and the limitations of unit choices, you could, let's say you really wanted to outflank a load of troops, you might be leaning towards the commandos and the PAP ones, using them for outflank with the PAP ones. Equally, if you wanted to really dominate the board from the start, then you might be using your PAP ones and your scouts and your sniper and spotter and so on to forward deploy. So it's linked in with how
that's quite nice. Yeah.
The effectiveness does kind of tell with regards to the scenarios and also your style of play as well.
So it's kind of a mindset where, instead of my original mindset of these two rules are in opposition and so one of them's going to be pointless, it's more these two rules allow you to use this squad in synergy with the rest of your force, which is actually a really nice thing to do.
Absolutely, yeah. In terms of support options, it's standard. So it's a sniper team, MMG, light, medium, heavy mortar, PAT, anti-tank rifle, flamethrower team. So nothing funny there at all.
Yeah, before we move on to artillery, Easy Army does list native irregulars.
I don't know why. Now,
does the FAQ give native irregulars to Aussies?
No. So unless I've missed something, when I was prepping for this episode and when I've played Australians in the past. I cannot see anywhere where it says native irregulars can be taken by an Australian unit or an Australian selector.
Yeah. Where do we find native irregulars in Bolt
Action? So they're in Empire and Flames.
Mm-hmm.
And they are limited as to... Because initially in Empire and Flames, they said they were generic, didn't they? And then they got FAQ'd and said they're not generic. And actually you can only take them in certain Japanese and the British Burma selector. Mm-hmm. I don't know why they appear in Easy Army for the Australians. And I haven't, to be honest, the way the Australians are represented in Easy Army is a bit suspect anyway, so I don't actually look on Easy Army when I'm building an Australian list.
Yeah. It says, Empire and Flames basically gives them to Chinese selectors, and it gives them to a couple of Japanese selectors and the fall of Singapore and Burma from Great Britain. The FAQ, the FAQ has the full entry now, and it says exact same thing for the selection. So yeah, so that sounds like it's just an Easy Army mistake. Mm. But if anyone knows why, let us know.
Yeah, I don't know where it comes from. I'd be interested to know, you know, if there is something out there that we've missed. So
moving on to artillery next, I guess, unless they've got something quirky before that.
No, so your artillery is pretty limited. So you can take a light howitzer, you can take a light or a medium AT gun, or you can take your Bofors heavy autocannon. The thing with the light howitzer is it's not the 25-pounder in the way that the British have it. So it doesn't get the anti-tank round that the British 25-pounder does. You also can make it a short 25-pounder, which reflects the fact that they basically stripped down the gun because they were lugging it over, you know, the mountain trails of Kokoda and whatnot. So if you want to, you can reduce it down by 5 points to take the gun shield off. So it isn't the British 25-pounder with the light AT gun as well as the 2-inch HE template. And if you really want to strip it back, you can take off the gun shield. You can add your spotter for 10 points.
Yeah, that's a bit of a shame, because that 25-pounder is probably my favourite gun in the whole game.
Mm-hmm. That said, it is an interesting option to strip it back, take the gun shield off, and use it as a second mortar, effectively.
Yeah. With a spotter.
Because you're not going to get exceptional damage against an artillery piece. So that light howitzer, the not British 25-pounder, is is not going to get sniped off the board in the way that a mortar team would. So if you wanted to double up on your HE indirect for 45 points, you're getting an artillery piece rather than 50 points, which is what you're paying for your medium mortar, once you've taken off the made it a short and taken off the gun shield.
Yeah, so that's all the artillery, I guess.
Yeah, and then your vehicles. So you get two tanks. You get your M3 Stuart light tank and your Matilda 2. Your Matilda 2 you can take with the anti-tank, the light anti-tank. You can take it with the light howitzer or the Frog, which is the vehicle-mounted flamethrower.
Yes.
And then your M3 Stuart. So this is interesting. So your M3 Stuart, so the blurb that goes in the book, the fluff in the book, talks about how it was used as one of the first Australian tanks to be deployed in the Pacific. And if you look at Australian tanks that were used in World War II, they did have M3 Stuarts in the Pacific. It doesn't appear in the theatre selectors later on. But if you look at the original Australian PDF, so the New Guinea book was came after an original PDF for using Australians in bolt action. In the original PDF, the Stuart does appear in one of the selectors, so I'm not sure if that was deliberate or if that was an oversight, because it gives you the option for an M3 Stuart, but then actually when you look at the selectors themselves, the Stuart doesn't appear in the Pacific selectors.
That sounds like it's a missed rather than an intentional, I would say. Is it the version of the Stuart that everyone knows and loves with 18 shots?
I don't think it is, no, because... Specifically in the rule book, it's an M3 Stuart, which has your pintle mounted MMG, it has your turret light anti tank gun, your coax MMG, and a single forward facing hole mounted MMG. Nowhere in it does it say you can add your additional LMG sponsons. I think the reason why people think you can is because when you look at the FAQ where it added the sponsons, it says any British M3 Stuart may add sponsons. LMGs. And I think what people have done is gone, here's a British M3 Stuart in an Australian list. Then they've applied the FAQ ruling and gone, oh, look, I can take a DACA Stuart in my Australian force. And if you actually look into the history of the use of the Stuarts by the Australian Army, one of the first things they did was remove all the sponsons because they weren't effective.
Yeah. And so I would say, as a TO, if someone does want to bring a Stuart because it's historically accurate to the platoon they represent, then I suppose what we say is you use the entry from New Guinea where you don't get all these extra shots, and then that way you can have your Stuart. It's not rules as written, but it's fair enough because it was what was there. But equally, we're not pushing it to the nth degree with the DACA Stuart.
I think it is rules as written, though, because if you look at the wording in the FAQ, it says...
No. Having the Stuart isn't rules as written because it's not in your selector.
Oh, I see what you mean. Okay, yeah. Yeah, the DACA Stuart, I absolutely can't see how you can justify it. I think it's a leap of logic to go from the Australians had a British M3 Stuart, the FAQ says the British M3 Stuart can put DACA on it, therefore the Australians can take DACA.
If a player could supply you photographic evidence of the Australians with loads of machine guns on their M3 Stuart, would you allow it then?
No, I wouldn't.
Still wouldn't allow it. Fair play. Moving on then, let's the Matilda. I do like the flamethrower variant. I don't think it's the most cost-effective tank in the game, I imagine, because how many points are you paying for a frog?
I want to say it's like 165, 155?
Yeah, 155.
155, yeah.
It's 155, and then all you've got is the flamethrower and a coax MMG, so it's quite a lot of points for just a portable flamethrower, but...
Yeah, and it's slow as well.
Yeah, but what a way to put people off coming towards you.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's Armour 9 as well, which is a tough tank to get rid of.
It's Armour 9, yeah. It's a great model. I love the Matilda.
Yeah.
I think it's a brilliant tank, yeah.
Quality. Just waltz across the middle of the battlefield with it.
Ba-boom. and then for your transport and tows, you've got a Jeep, you've got the Brain Gun Carrier, you've got your general purpose truck, and you've got your LVT-4 Buffalo.
That's all you need?
Yeah. Now, I would argue that if you rock up to an event with an LVT Buffalo with the autocannon on the top of it, I guess technically speaking you can, because in the Great Britain book it allows you to add your autocannon. I think these are only used by the British in Northern Europe late 1940, mid 45 when they were crossing the Rhine. It wasn't something, the Americans never did it. So the American LVT Buffalo 4 doesn't have an autocannon option. So if you try to, turn up with your LVT Buffalo with an autocannon on, I don't think really it's technically in the spirit of it, even if you probably could do it in terms of as it's written.
Yeah, I wasn't aware of that personally, of the history, so if I'd done it, I would have just feigned ignorance. But but I guess the reason you're saying that is because the LVT, you're grabbing that entry from the British book rather than from the New Guinea book. So that's why you get that happening.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. So it just says, see the British book. You look at the British book, and the British book allows you to add the autocannon on.
So it's interesting that they've actually published rules for the Stuart in New Guinea.
Yes.
But then not for the other ones.
And I think that's because in all the other ones it says, see the British entry. Whereas for the Stuart, it says, this is the Australian M3 Stuart, i.e. you can't put DACA on it.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to play. The thing is, though, the DACA option came after... It was added to the game after New Guinea was published, though, wasn't it?
It was, yeah.
That's the thing that's sort of making me...
Yeah.
It's a bit of a head-scratcher for me, because if that entry already existed in its current form, why did they add it?
Mm-hmm.
And it's a weird one.
It's a bit of... It's like reverse engineering, but reverse logic.
Yeah. It's like future-proofing, isn't it? Where they've... Yeah. Clearly the author knew that they were going to add DACA shenanigans and has guarded against it. Is that all the units?
The units. So it's not a huge selection, but they are different. Yeah, it's not just your bog standard. Here's some inexperienced. Here's some regulars. Here's some vets. Some of them have got some SMGs. One of them's got a flamethrower. I think the addition of things like the scout team and the fact you can take an inexperienced engineer team if you really wanted to, but the PAP ones as well, I think is what gives the flavour to the Australians in the New Guinea theatre.
Nice. So, speaking of theatres, how many selectors do they have at their disposal?
So there's seven selectors.
Seven selectors?
Yeah. Now, but interestingly, it includes a Mediterranean and North Africa selector. And it actually says in the book, all of the units below are... pretty much the British units, other than the AIF section. That's the only one which is which is not. And it says, and this doesn't actually apply to the campaign book, but if you really want to represent the Australians in North Africa, obviously when New Guinea was published, which was 2016, I want to say. It's 2017.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think Western Desert was out at that point. Yeah, Western Desert came out in 2018. So this was the first appearance of Australians in bolt action with some special rules. So what the author's done here, which is Mark Barber, is provide you with the option to run an Australian force in the Western Desert in North Africa prior to the full Warlord Games campaign book on the Western Desert.
It's like a sticking plaster solution while you're waiting for the big book to come out.
What I like about this selector is it reflects the fact that in North Africa, the Australians used captured Italian tanks and also captured Vichy French tanks. So you could use the Renault R35, and you could also take the M11, mm-hmm. Which is from the armies of Italy, if you so choose.
Nice.
The rest of the stuff is basically British. So you got that one. You've then got Lark Force. So moving into the actual New Guinea theatre itself, you've got the Lark Force selector, which is an all infantry selector, and that is reflecting the initial defences on New Britain.
Mm-hmm.
You've got your 1942 Australian Army Reinforced Platoon, which is predominantly all infantry. You can take transport, but you don't get any tanks and so on. So that is your pre-jungle division changes. In this one, you don't get your engineers, so you get your AIF, your PAP1, or your militia, and then you've got your normal selection of support options. You've got your Kanga force.
So the two, before we move on to the next one, so the two that you've said so far in New Guinea, none of those will include jungle units of any type, because it's before we do that
transition. It's pre-1943, that's right, yeah. So this is your initial AIF, militia, and the PAP ones with your support options.
Yeah, and just in terms of flavour, what sort of restrictions do they have? Are they sort of infantry heavy or vehicle heavy?
Yeah, no vehicles.
No vehicles,
so,
both of them.
So you can take transport. You can take up to one transport or tow in total in the 1942 Australian Army Reinforced Platoon. Mm-hmm. You get nothing in the Lark Force Reinforced Platoon because this is them defending New Britain, and the Australian Army is the initial New Guinea defence.
Nice.
Where you didn't have tons of vehicles.
Nice.
Your Kanga Force is where you start to see some of your interesting independent company raiding parties coming in. So in this one, you don't have to take your lieutenant.
Mm-hmm.
So remember when we talked about the unit entry, we said you can add in that officer.
Ah, see.
So for this selector, you take three independent company raiding party units, one of which must have an officer, and then you can bolt on a bunch of other infantry. Again, no vehicles, because they are independent raiding companies rather than driving around with the Matilda and their brand carriers and that sort of thing.
This one sounds like a fun one for something like Three Good Men, where it's mm-hmm. theatres only. It's a little bit more interesting. I imagine most players will never have encountered the Kanga Force before. Has it got any anti-tank, if it doesn't have tanks?
No.
No.
No. So,
do the independent company raiding party, or whatever they're called,
they get AT grenades.
Oh,
yeah,
perfect.
Yeah.
That's all you need.
Yeah. But you're paying so many points for that unit.
To be fair, if you haven't got a lot of time to paint and you've got a tournament coming up, this might be the one for you then.
Yeah. Your next select is your defence of Milne Bay, which was one of the very famous battles that the Australians fought in New Guinea when the Japanese tried to invade the southern part of eastern New Guinea, Milne Bay. This is, again, fairly limited. You're not getting any tanks, but you are getting infantry. It's AAF or militia. Interesting thing about this is it's a composite force, so you can take US units.
Nice.
So you can take US engineer squads, mm-hmm. 0-4. You can take your heavy MG, if you so wish, which would be the US one. You can take in the book it's listed as a medium anti-aircraft gun. It actually means the light anti-aircraft mm-hmm. gun. And then you can add in some of the transport options from the US, like your Dodge, your M3 half track, and your slightly larger trucks as well.
Interesting.
So that's quite an interesting one. No tanks, like I said.
Does it have any special rules or anything for the selector that makes it? Because it basically, what I'm thinking is, if I just took my four engineer squads in four Dodge carriers as is traditional. Mm-hmm. Is there any sort of quirky add-ons for this selector that would make it worth not just doing a US platoon to do that?
Yeah, so the quirky add-on is that if you take a US unit, it has to be at the lowest available experience level.
Okay.
So your engineers have to be regular, mm-hmm. which is not a big deal. For example, though, if you took your HMG, that would have to be inexperienced. If you took your light AT gun as your artillery, light anti-aircraft gun, also cannon, yeah. that would have to be inexperienced, and your vehicles would have to be inexperienced.
And also the trucks would be inexperienced as well.
Yeah,
and
yeah
so,
exactly, yeah.
Yeah, it's not worth doing. It's very much one for, there's no game benefit to doing it. It's very much one for theme.
Absolutely, yeah, yeah. But it fits, it fits the scenarios in the book.
Very nice.
So the main one, the one I would recommend looking at, is the 1943-45 Australian Jungle Division selector. So this is a standard loadout. So it's a lieutenant, first or second. Your two compulsory units can be one Jungle Division squad, commando squad, PAP 1 squad, up to one engineer squad. You can then add in your higher officers, your medic, your chaplain, your forward observer. Your infantry, up to four extras, which is Jungle Division, Commando, PAP 1, up to one engineer section.
Mm-hmm.
So you can take a maximum of two engineer sections in this selector, one as your compulsory and then one as your optional. You can also take 0-1 platoon scout teams, and then you've got your usual MG, mortar, PAT, sniper, flamethrower. For your artillery, you can take 0-1 either the 25-pounder Australian version or the M1A1 75mm pack howitzer, which is the US version.
Yeah.
I think they're pretty much the same.
Yeah.
You can take your Bofors gun. You can take 0-1 tank. So this is the selector where you take your tank, which is at the Matilda. Now, if you look at the Australian PDF that came out before the New Guinea book, in that selector in the PDF, it adds in the M3 Stuart. And that's why I said it's a bit weird that it's included as a unit, but it doesn't appear in any of the selectors. And then your transport 0-1 per 0-1, sorry, in total, which is your Jeep, truck, or 0-1 LVT per infantry unit. Okay, so you can take more than one LVT, or you can only take one Jeep general purpose truck. And then your final selector, if you really want to, is your Australian Tank Troop New Guinea 1943-45 Armoured Platoon Selector, which is basically Matilda's.
Nice.
Matilda's plus Jungle Division Commando PAP 1 up to one engineer section, and you get your normal support options. What is interesting is that unlike other tank platoons, you don't have to have transport for the infantry.
Yeah, because they're going through the jungle, and so it makes no sense to be in trucks. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That'd be really cool, actually, to have three frogs. And yeah. then I don't even care what else is in the army, really, if I've got three flame tanks.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
So what I would be looking at, if I was going to be taking an Australian platoon to an event, which is allowing selectors, I'd be looking at the Australian Jungle Division selector. Because that's the only one that gives you the tank. You can't put your engineers in a brain carrier because you can't take a brain carrier in that selector. But I'd be looking at taking, you know, PAP 1s, engineers. So I've got my two compulsory core units. I take one of them as an engineer, one of them as a PAP 1, and then my 0-4, I'd be adding another engineer, adding another PAP 1, and then seeing what I've got left over. I would take your platoon scout team, and I'd be utilizing that forward deploying rules,
yeah.
whereby I'm going to win the roll off, and I'm going to push people back 18 inches, and I'm going to back it up with a Matilda frog.
Nice. Do the commandos get forward deployment?
They don't get forward deployment. No. So your forward deployers are going to be your PAP ones,
your
platoon scout team, your sniper, and your spotter if you're taking
yeah.
them, and so on.
Because I'm thinking, if I was doing this, I'm going to take the frog naturally. Mm-hmm. I'm going to take two squads of engineers naturally.
Yeah.
Get a truck for them. Put the officer in the truck with them. And then I'm probably going to outflank the two engineers in the truck with the officer with the frog because mm-hmm. it's slow. So you need to get it, really the outflank's the only way to get it close to the enemy without getting blown up. And then I was thinking about how I'm going to then use the forward deployment rule so that really when we do our dice out the bag deployment, I'd ideally like to have as little as possible in the bag. You set up, I just put my units wherever I'd like them, and then you can't come within 18 of my units. So that's how I would be looking at building it. I haven't looked at the specifics, but that's what I'm thinking.
Yeah. Now, it's a real shame that the wording in the book isn't such that this is a generic platoon and you can take it as a generic platoon. You do see them at events. And you know, if you were going to allow the Australians in a generic platoon event, you'd be following the normal generic platoon restrictions. So, you know, 0-1 tank and all that. Your two compulsory squads, 0-3 of your optionals, because you're only having five squads in total, all that sort of thing. So when you see them at events, what you often see is engineers in brand carriers backed up with a steward and that sort of thing. I would lean into the forward deploying elements, because I think the national characteristics allow some really interesting gameplay with regards to area denial, controlling that middle part of the board, but then rushing up engineers in brand carriers to support my forward deploying units before they start to get overrun.
Yeah, from my perspective, I don't think we need generic Australians. I think if I'm running a tournament that's generic, I'm going to probably just say, let's not have Australians.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's got theatre selectors, Australians all day long, because I think specifically that selector, the 43-45 one, I think it's a nicely balanced one, because it has some real strengths in that you can have seven infantry squads basically. So if it's single platoon, any objective missions, seven infantry squads is going to be really useful, but you've got the limitation of obviously no Bren carriers. And so it's nicely balanced, and that's why I'm a little bit uncomfortable with it as a generic, where you can have all the engineers in Bren carriers, have the forward deployers as you want. Like, it just seems a bit unnecessary. If you want something like that, play normal Brits, I think.
Mm. It's a shame, though, that if you go, you know, as written, you wouldn't see Australians at a generic event. You wouldn't see late war Free French.
Mm-hmm.
You wouldn't see Africa Free French, because both of those are theatre selectors. You wouldn't see Canadians, because they don't have a generic list. You wouldn't see Chinese, mm-hmm. because that's not a generic list either. So you would, if you follow the wording of the books, you're ruling out some major participants and some really interesting armies. I was looking on the WTC website earlier today when we were prepping for this episode, and they have allowed Australians and they have allowed Chinese. They are basically applying the generic selector restrictions, and then the units are from the New Guinea book or the Empire in Flames for the Chinese. So that's another way of doing it. It's just saying, actually, and they've also allowed the late war Free French. Mm-hmm. So that's another way of doing it, is going, here's your generic selector. We're going to allow you to take the units, which actually, as written in the books, only apply to theatre selectors.
Yeah. From my perspective, I don't mind that you don't see some nations at some events. And I think it comes back to what we talked about with Russell, where like we want every tournament to be different. And so if you can't take your Australians to this tournament, from my perspective, it's not the end of the world, as long as there are other tournaments you can't take them to. Because in the same way, there's certain armies you can't take to tournaments, like the theatre tournament. If I turned up with the army that's built just to play the game without any historical context, that's not allowed there either. And so every tournament will have armies you can't take to it. And so I don't really have a problem with that in its of itself, as long as we've got what we talked about last episode, the wide variety. And so this is why, as I said earlier, I don't think we need generic Australians, in my opinion.
See, I was going to look at it the other way and go, that's a really good argument for not only running generic events and actually for running theatre selectors. And I am affected by this in the sense that my, you know, Free French North Africa army, I can only ever take to a theatre selector event unless I wish to use the generic option. But then half the things I've got in that, I can't take.
Yeah.
Yeah. And likewise, I could never take my Australians. So yeah.
And this is where the variety has a real strength. If we have loads of different tournaments of loads of different styles, everyone gets what they want, just not necessarily on the day they want it, if you see what I mean.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think, from my perspective, very competitive tournaments, just keep it generic, because also the thing that does is it narrows down the options, which means it's easier to sort of play the game well, because there's less to know, basically. You know who you're playing, and you know how to counter them.
Mm.
Whereas most of the players in a competitive tournament, the competitive players won't have played Australians, so that is something extra that you have to learn on top. And so from my perspective, actually, I think in terms of sort of like pure competition, keeping it strictly generic, I like. But for sort of the wider scene, I think tournaments that aren't completely competitive, yeah, throw in theatre selectors or quirky stuff as much as you can to give people those options.
Mm. Obviously, the listeners can't see because I'm smirking here. And as you're saying that, I'm thinking, that to me sounds a bit boring and stale.
Which bit?
The let's just restrict generic events to lists which say they are generic, and therefore you rule out your free French, you rule out your Chinese, you rule out your Australians, you rule out your Canadians, etc., etc.
Yeah, and that's because of the purpose of the game, and so the purpose of the tournament rather. And so, from my perspective, your competitive tournaments, it's about playing the game and sort of like the strategy of the game specifically.
Mm.
Whereas your what I called exhibition tournaments in the last episode, they're about sort of showing off the history and sort of showing what can be done with the system. And so I actually don't think it's boring, because the competitive thing, I don't mind a lack of variety, because I want a variety in tactics rather than a variety in forces. Whereas at the exhibition games, I don't mind if the games are quite sort of bland and usual if you've got a really quirky army you're coming up against.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's, like, you might find that boring, but equally I might find the other side boring. So that, and that's exactly the joy of, like, the variety, isn't it? That was it, different strokes for different folks and all that.
Mm-hmm.
Or, as Mark Vance might say, it's a broad church.
It is a broad church, yeah.
Brilliant. Well, I've really enjoyed going through the Australians. It's one that I've never really looked at, because as I lean more to the competitive side,
mm-hmm.
I tend to look more at the armies that I'm almost guaranteed to be allowed to use. And it was really interesting seeing the quirky units that they've got access to. And if I do decide to build three frogs, I know exactly how I'll be using them now.
Yeah. I think they're a great force. They have their limitations, absolutely. The models are brilliant. I really like the Warlord Games models. And if you are going to build an Australian army, you got your Warlord Games metal options. What I've done is to take the British Commonwealth box set, which is the ones that come with the slouch hats.
Mm-hmm.
And the guys in the shorts, you can use to represent the militia, because initially they were just equipped with whatever they had. So a lot of that is going to be the shorts. The AIF, as they came back, and the Jungle Division guys and the Commandos, I've used the British guys with trousers. So using either the British and Canadian box set or the Commando box set. But then taking the arms from the Commonwealth box set, which are the short sleeves. The only bit where, if you really want to get historical, the SMGs the Australians used were Owen guns, which they weren't the Thompsons. The magazine goes on the top of it rather than in the side, like the Sten, or it's modelled differently to the Thompson, and the Lewis guns as well. But you can get the metal Warlord Games with the correct SMGs and the correct LMGs if you want. The Patpon models are great. I love the Patpon models as well.
Nice.
I really like the Aussies. I like the rules behind them. I like the models behind them, and I really enjoyed kit bashing and putting together Aussie troops using US Marines as well, because of the trousers and the slightly ripped nature of the trousers and so on, and the holes in the knees and that kind of thing. So yeah, there's some really interesting opportunities there if you take an Aussie army.
Very nice. Well, thank you for listening.
Yeah, please like, share, subscribe. Let us know if you play Aussies and how you find them. And if anyone has an answer to the native irregular question, drop us a message or ping it on a Facebook post as well.
Ta-ta for now.
Ta-ta for now.
Oh, we should have said a traditional Australian goodbye. I don't know what that is. Goodbye.